We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildebrandt, that fine gentleman over there, the one and only Dan Rubenstein. Now back in Chicagoland. Dan, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I would recommend not flying with a 3-month-old and a 2.5-year-old. I think that's super not fun.
You also flew with like 8 pounds of cheese. What?
12.
Explain. Yeah. It wasn't 12. Explain to me the cheese thing. And like, did you have trouble getting through security with that? Like, what's it like trying to put that through the scanner? 12 pounds of cheese.
There was a brand of cheese I was looking for that they didn't have in the Midwest, even though it's a brand that I think is made in the Midwest. But they had it at a restaurant supply store on the West Coast, but they didn't have it in the supply store I go to here. Okay. So I knew I had a really light suitcase because a bulk of the clothes and stuff were in Jody with an I. Her suitcase had also the kids' stuff. So I just had mine in a little suitcase. It was like a 12-pound suitcase, and it's not overweight until like 50. And it was a checked bag. And so I said, you know what? I could throw a couple of those blue ice things in there with the two blocks of cheese, the 2 6-pound blocks of cheese. And it's cold underneath the plane. And I just said, look, if I open my suitcase after the fact and there it's warm blocks of cheese, I'll toss it. It's not a big deal. It didn't break the bank to buy this cheese. But if they're cold still, it seems like a win for me.
So you're
somebody who goes through a lot of cheese making pizza at home.
You're now officially a cheese runner.
Yeah. A coyote of dairy. Yeah, that's me.
Have you used it yet in the pizza?
No, not yet. I will this week. And this is a college football show. This is a Q&A college football show that I promise we're going to get to momentarily. I do promise. But no, I have not used it yet. Later in the week, I'm going to make a couple pies and see how it works out. I have to be a pretty strategic with my pizza making right now with two little ones.
Right.
And this and the Solid Verbal Universe and future Solid Verbal projects occupying my time. So I'm very excited to use the Saputo. I like Grande brand a lot, but that's harder to get. Saputo premium gold label pizza cheese.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It's a slower melt, Ty, so you get the cheese bubbling and browning at the same rate as your dough and crust. So
you're one of the weirdest people I know for admitting this on
Thank
air.
You.
And I love you for it. I love
you
for
it. Yeah, why not?
Just
always
so
embrace who you are and what you do. There's no reason to do otherwise. It's the healthiest thing to me.
There it is. Well, welcome back, everybody. Thank you for listening to our So Now What miniseries that we ran throughout the month of May. Last week was the final week. Got a lot of great feedback. Got some feedback from some folks who were like, you know what? Let's screw 2020. Yeah. I want to talk about 2021. So we're going to start doing that now as we go through your questions. We had a bunch of questions, forward-looking questions about the 2021 season. Excited to go through those with you, Daniel. Mm-hmm. One other housekeeping note that I'm just going to mention quickly before we play the sound and get to questions. You may recall a few weeks ago, we were taking submissions at solidverbal.com, email address, for people who wanted to help us out. And right, we had an incredible outpouring of response to that request. There is now another slot that we are able to open, and that is for a social media intern.
Yeah.
Social media is like a thing now. I don't know if you've heard of this. We're looking for a social media intern, somebody who can show us that they've done this sort of thing before, not just like on a personal level, but have like worked and
right. helped just help out a little bit. Yeah.
Others on the social media side. So submissions at solidverbal.com. We're looking for fun people who'd want to come on, help us out, and can help, you know, with some cool ideas. So yeah, that's all what right. we're waiting for. Submissions at solidverbal.com for our social media intern, if you're interested.
Would love that. Would love to hear from people interested. There's not much in the way of news before we get into the questions, as is the case. I mean, there have been some transfers. I saw Sam Neuer, the Colorado starting quarterback from last season, who was himself a converted safety. The quarterback room in Boulder is particularly thin, so it'll be JT Shroud, or it looks like Brendan Lewis, who is a redshirt freshman, I believe. I saw Nick Saban got an extension for years and years, which makes sense. It seems like kind of a rollover.
Yeah. Question about that, which maybe we can start with.
Nick Saban got an extension. So, you know, there's more transfers trickling in. I saw Keelan Robinson, a former blue chip running back who has been in the Alabama program, transferred to Texas to rejoin a number of the staff members who made that move, including obviously Sark and Kyle Flood, who is the, you know, offensive coordinator, quote unquote, but it's Sark running the show and he will be running the offensive line. Flood will be. So not a ton in the way of big news. I've saw that there are some, we mentioned this a little bit, some kickoff issues that the Pac-12 coaches or coach David Shaw, the Kansas State thing. It'll be, we mentioned that on a previous show, or actually I think it was probably on the Patreon only show we did, that David Shaw none too pleased with the body clock game that they have against what, Kansas State in Arlington?
That's right.
At Jerry World.
Yep.
And I think the Oregon-Ohio State game is an 11 a.m. Central, 9 a.m. Pacific kick in Columbus. So that's like the big noon Saturday, because it's noon Eastern time, big noon Saturday kick. So that'll be early for Oregon. I don't think I've heard anything in the way of Oregon coaches talking about that kick, but it is something that is not a terrific thing for teams flying west to east. So,
right.
There's that. The Pac-12 has a new commissioner, and we'll see if kick times and TV deals and bowl deals and all that stuff gets revised, updated, as you know, whenever that TV deal comes up. So that's that. Otherwise, not too much else worth diving deep into. We have a number of really strong questions.
Good
spearhood, whatever.
Yeah.
And if you are a Patreon Verballer, and that means you have signed up at verballers.com, you can also choose to watch this. And Ty looks particularly handsome. It looks like a cotton linen baby blue blend. There's a collar, it's a button down. He looks like he's about to go on an above average date.
See, you're always giving me a hard time because all I have are gray t-shirts.
Right. And I'm wearing a gray t-shirt.
And you're wearing a gray t-shirt, which I didn't know before we connected up here. So when we decided like, oh, we have to record this, I ran into the room. I grabbed the first non-gray shirt that I could find. And it was this.
Looks splendid. And look, Kai, you look great.
You're back from your trips out west. We are back collectively as a show from our trip back into 2020. I went to a restaurant for the first time yesterday in like over a year. I'm feeling good, man. So why not dress up? Why not dress
up?
Why not
three?
Why not build the excitement headed into this 2021 season? I'm ready.
All right. Let's start at the only place that we really should start, and that's in Ames, Iowa. Ty, Breece Hall, Heisman. This comes to us from Bort. For Baller Bort.
Bort.
Very active and fantastic. What would Breece Hall have to do to win the Heisman? Is this team, the Clones, a realistic national championship contender? And just how badly will they beat Iowa this year? Well, let's go in reverse. How badly will Iowa State beat Iowa? I'm going to say not very, because that doesn't seem to be
never happens.
The way that the world rolls necessarily.
No.
They, of course, did not play the Cy-Hawk game last season because the Big Ten was conference only. But early prediction on that game, I tend to like Iowa ugly because that's just the way of the world. early prediction on that game, and how high are your expectations in terms of national conversation? Because this is an Iowa State team who won a New Year's Six bowl game last year against a legitimately good team.
Right.
And Breece Hall and Nueva York.
I mean, look, I like Iowa State, as I have every year for the last what feels like eternity.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun team to root for. You'll remember back in the day, we had Paul Rhodes on the show.
Of course.
Friend of the show, Paul Rhodes, so proud.
Mm-hmm.
We've always stuck for Iowa State. Yep. I'm looking at Iowa State's schedule right now. Look, Iowa State is going to have to deal with a backloaded schedule.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to deal with a backloaded schedule. There's a good chance that they run through the first half, eight games, I don't know, of this schedule, and they go undefeated. There's a good chance of that. But what it comes down to for them is the last couple weeks of the year in November, when they've got Texas at home, they've got Oklahoma on the road, and they've got TCU at home. And then yep. the Big 12 championship game. If they can make it through that stretch of November, they've certainly got a shot at the Big 12. I don't think that's too far beyond reason. In terms of a pure national contender, though, I don't know if I'm feeling that, man. That's a little bit of a bridge too far.
I don't know how good of a chance they have at 8-0. I mean, aside from Iowa, they also have, Kansas State and Oklahoma State in that opening. And Oklahoma State has been kind of a nightmare for the Clones last year.
I feel like the Big 12 should be the goal. And
yeah,
if you can get to 8-0 and give yourself a shot going into November, that's kind of the goal, as opposed to, are we going to make the playoff? Are we going to win the Big 12? Are we going to go undefeated?
It's reasonably fair to say a year after winning the Fiesta Bowl, a New Year's Six game over another conference champion, not that Iowa State was, but by a conference champion, a P5 conference champion, say, okay, where do we stand nationally now? I mean, they were a balanced team with a relatively strong offense, relatively strong defense. I think they returned Greg Eisworth. He comes back, and Charlie Kohler would start at tight end for damn near anybody. Chaz Kohler would start at tight end for damn near anybody, and they return a good amount. So I think it's a fair question to say, not just Big 12, because they beat the Big 12 champion last year. They came back and beat Texas, and they beat Oregon. So their stage has grown. The attention, the magnifying glass has grown in magnitude on the Clones. The problem with Iowa State right now is I don't see a Winter Wonder, a killer at receiver. All due respect to Xavier Hutchinson, who I believe is back. And Brock Purdy has these disappearing acts in certain games. They had four or five straight three and outs, I believe, against Oklahoma State. And I looked it up. It seemed like a clear day. It wasn't especially windy. There was not a monsoon situation happening. And I think they missed a semi-guppy. They doinked a field goal, lost by three, and doinked a field goal late in the first half. And so there's that issue to me. If we're going to talk about a national championship contender, I want explosive speed on offense, game-breaking speed that if they are in an ugly game, they have somebody who can bust, an 81-yard run. And
right.
I like Breece Hall a good amount, but I don't think that offense is necessarily inventive, creative, and intended to generate those plays. It's much more ball control at right. times. I looked up his percentage of carries going for 5+ yards was pretty low compared to the best of 2020's best running backs. And I don't think it's necessarily his fault, but I think the way that that offense is designed, it's not especially built for consistent explosion from running back. And I also don't think he is not necessarily a Heisman contender, both for that reason, and I don't think he is the type of all-purpose player. Now, if he puts up cartoonish numbers,
right.
It's like somebody like, who was it, Andre Williams at Boston College, who went for 2,000 yards, that's a conversation. I'd like to see him in a more all-purpose Najee Harris, Christian McCaffrey. Those are the guys that seem to get those invites where like, okay, this guy is a danger out of the backfield in the passing game or in the return game. And
right.
so I think,
well, and here's
Breece Hall's he just happens to be very, very good.
He's very good. He rushed for almost 700 more yards in 2020.
No.
Over the previous season, we all know it was a goofy season in 2020. We talked about that for the last month, but
right.
like the other component of this is that Spencer Rattler is also in the Big 12, and there's a good chance that Spencer Rattler's team is going to beat Iowa State once, maybe twice, depending on how things go. That offense is set up for someone like Spencer Rattler. So right. you would need your team, I think, to outperform Oklahoma once, if not twice. And then also you'd need to do something statistically that's sort of cartoonish to make up for the fact that Spencer Rattler is going to put up crazy numbers.
Right. I'd also say, because we mentioned the Iowa game and Bort. It's so funny saying that name.
Bort.
Bort. My son is also named Bort. If Breece Hall goes bonkers against Iowa in week, I believe it's two, right? They have Northern Iowa week one.
Week two.
If he goes bonkers in a winning effort, I think September statements are huge. Now, it's not everything, but from a place that isn't necessarily going to get benefits of the doubt late in the year in terms of talent, I think bonkers against the Hawks, I think it's a conversation we can have in earnest at that point. But
I will,
until then, yeah, wait and see.
I will say this, though. I do think he is the top running back at this early juncture in the preseason.
He in is the Big 12 or overall?
No, he's the top running back candidate for the Heisman.
Hmm. Interesting.
So I think he's definitely got a shot. I just think his path is going to be blocked by the fact that his team needs to beat Oklahoma again, once, if not twice. And secondly, right. I think the Heisman frontrunner, Spencer Rattler, is also in the Big 12.
So Bijan Robinson has, I think, better odds right now at Texas. At running back.
Okay.
That's what I'm seeing right now. According per Vegas Insider.
Right.
Bijan Robinson will be playing in that more inventive offense. We'll see who ends up winning that quarterback job. But Bijan Robinson, with the benefit of Sark, with the benefit of what we've seen from him in terms of explosivity. Now, I think a lot of that's Colorado in the bowl game, whatever. But sorry, Colorado.
I like Bijan Robinson.
I think his ceiling might be higher, but the proven guy is Breece Hall. Though the guy you can set your watch to is Breece Hall. But yeah, I think
we've been waiting for
Heisman
Texas.
Upside, it's Bijan. Yeah,
we've been waiting for Texas to be back as long as we've been waiting for Texas to find a running back consistently.
Right.
So now, if you're asking me who am I picking, who am I betting on, I would definitely pick Breece right. Hall over Bijan Robinson, even if the ceiling is higher. It's just more of a proven commodity at this point. So anyway, let's move on. Let's go next question.
Okay. You tell me. Where do you want to go?
Let's talk about the Saban question. We got it from okay. Justin. And he says, what is the ideal retirement scenario for Saban? Does he win one more, go off into the sunset, get a cushy TV gig? He's pretty good on TV, by the way.
Just he is good.
Throwing this out there.
Better at coaching.
Better at coaching. Or yeah. does he coach until he can't anymore because he can't imagine doing anything else? So a couple different ways that you can approach Justin's question. He says, what is the ideal retirement for Saban? That is a subjective question for Nick Saban.
Right.
What is ideal for him? I find it hard to believe that Nick Saban's going to be satisfied doing anything other than coaching.
I agree.
He seems okay. like he would be miserable around the house doing household chores, maybe just doing the TV thing that Urban's been doing the last couple of years before right. he caught on with the Jags. So if from my layman's perspective, I think the ideal for him as a man would be to just coach until he can't anymore. It seems like he's that kind of dude.
I don't think there's any sort of elegant way to do things. I mean, we've seen guys at major places, big, Power Five programs say, okay, it's May, it's June. I think Bob Stoops retired when I was on my honeymoon. I had to be like, Ty, get somebody.
Right.
I don't think I have an internet connection in Santorini. There's no right way. There's no best way. I don't see a Nick Saban situation because he's so competitive that he is going to retire after winning a national championship and put his successor, especially if it's somebody internally, in a really bad recruiting position where all of a sudden guys are asking out of their letters of intent.
Right.
And
right.
it's not great for them the way Bob Stoops did it, where he didn't do it until June. And so guys were sort of locked in with spring practice and, much further along the road in that process. But I think that's what we'll probably end up seeing. And maybe Nick Saban's going to stay on in an advisory role. But no, I think Nick Saban will know whenever it is that he doesn't feel the juice to recruit, to coach, to be at practice, to be the person that pays that close attention to every single detail, he'd just be like, I'm out. Or his health will dictate it. Something will dictate that he is just like, nope, I'm not giving everything I have, so it's not worth it. And he'll just leave. Now, will it be a situation like Steve Spurrier, middle of the season? I say no. I think he will be able to muster. If he's physically able to, he'll coach out whatever his final year is, unless there is something, you know, physically holding him back. But no, I think it's going to be much closer to Bob Stoops, where he is just going to be in the doldrums of the offseason and just realizes he doesn't have the capacity to dig as deep as he demands of himself. And he'll be like, yeah, that's that. Offensive coordinator's taking over, whatever. So
could it be an NIL kind of thing? Because we just saw Coach K from Duke decide that he's going to hang it up after this year. Reportedly, one of the reasons, or one of the accelerants, let's say, in that decision-making was the NIL and the variables introduce.
I saw conflicting reports on that he had been supportive of, publicly anyway, supportive of the changes. You know, obviously basketball is a lot trickier with fewer roster spots and how transfers affect a basketball roster, maybe more so than football, because there's only so many guys you can lose before you really have to start panicking. I don't think it's a clear analog, but obviously these are two all-time great coaches in their sports. But no, I just don't see Alabama being especially affected by things like that. They've been able to, you know, they lose coaches every year and they restock, no problem. Lose transfers, top level transfers, they restock. Like Nick Saban just has been so ahead of the curve and able to roll with it, pretty extreme and drastic changes throughout the year. So I don't see that as being something that affects him.
No, and that's the thing. I was thinking Joe Paterno. All right, Joe Paterno should have retired long before he was eventually forced out. I'm not going into all that, but just from a football coaching standpoint, Joe Paterno got to a point where everything he was doing was stagnant. There was no creativity. He would bring new guys in here and there, but it was ultimately the same thing that he ran for 50 years. Nick Saban doesn't do that.
Just disrespect to the spread, HD. Just disrespect.
Nick Saban doesn't do that. Nick Saban is turnover every year. He changed his entire system like 8 times. This is a guy who's very adaptable. And so it will certainly not go that way for Saban. It's ultimately going to be when he decides that he wants to hang it up. He will remain successful for as long as he's there.
Yeah, he signed the best recruiting class of all time.
Of all time. So it's not like he is taking his foot off the gas. There are no signs that he is at all slowing down, that he enjoys it any less. If anything, I think he would enjoy life less if he weren't, you know, doing this. So we'll see.
Most ruthlessly efficient scoring offense of all time, I believe, this past fall with Mac Jones, a first year full-time starter.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Hoover Street.
No signs of wear and tear.
Hoover Street writes in, he says, does Michigan have a reasonable head coaching plan B? If things don't turn around for Harbaugh, do they have a reasonable plan B?
Right.
This is the operative question. If you are a Michigan fan, if you're Michigan brass, if not Harbaugh, then who?
Well, I was just going to paraphrase Stephen Godfrey, longtime friend. Every AD has a piece of paper in their desk of calls they will make, of guys they have begun to vet or even think might be a good fit. Should a coach do something to get fired? Should a coach leave for another job? Should a coach just decide to retire for whatever reason out of the blue? Every AD has that. And there's no reason to think Ward Manuel doesn't have that. And a good reason also is he nailed the basketball hire. Wow. Juwan Howard, right? As far as I can tell, has been very well received and has had a lot of early success as the Michigan basketball coach. So he nailed the basketball hire. So there's no reason to think that he is not on top of things as it relates to the football of the future program, if and when Jim Harbaugh is no longer the head coach there. So they do have a backup plan. I think they have a plan A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And time will tell when that piece of paper will be taken out of Ward Manuel's desk. But they do. Absolutely.
Here's the thing, though. Here's the one caveat to that. And I don't disagree. Of course, everybody at that level has to have that piece of paper in the desk. I am going to draw a very crude comparison here to the time that Notre Dame hired Charlie Weiss.
Okay.
If we could go back way yonder, Thank you. Let's hop in the time machine for a second. Notre Dame brought Charlie Weiss on under the pretense that he was going to be the savior of the program. Charlie Weiss didn't like say anything to try and dispel that notion. He kind of steered into it.
And delivered on it early.
Delivered on it early, sort of led to his undoing in the end. We won't go into that whole rigmarole, but that was, they brought him in under that pretense that he was going to be the savior of the program, as did Michigan with Jim Harbaugh.
Right.
Jim Harbaugh has been fine for the program. He's certainly been better for Michigan football than Weiss was for Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no getting around the fact that if they move on beyond Harbaugh, it will be a letdown for Michigan fans, brass, you name it, boosters.
Will it be?
It will be felt as a letdown.
Well, it'll be, yeah, it'll be disappointing that Harbaugh didn't work
It will be
out.
Very disappointing. Very disappointing. And I recall, even when I knew that things were going sideways for Weiss at Notre Dame, even though I knew they had to move on, it still felt disappointing and like a big old L when they pulled the trigger. And then they hire Brian Kelly. And Brian Kelly at the time was not the sexy hire. He had a bunch of great seasons with Cincinnati. He had been with Grand Valley State. I think it was widely assumed that he was just the guy who wanted the job the most. He was in the running for it the first time. They didn't go that direction.
I think he wasn't Harbaugh, but he was, I mean, just led Cincinnati to an undefeated season.
He was a very good coach, but he was certainly not the sexy, dare I say, Charlie Weiss hire.
Right. Not connected to a name as huge as Tom Brady or something.
Exactly. Yeah. So when they brought Brian Kelly in, I remember feeling a bit let down. Like, okay. Like, he wanted the job the most, and that was cool. Mm-hmm. But it's still like, Brian Kelly? Okay. How do I feel about this?
But that's sort of the antithesis, right? That it's somebody with college coaching experience, somebody who has like who has come up through the ranks in a very collegey way, unlike, you know, Charlie Weiss, you know, with his experience in the pros for as long as he was there. And it was just like, okay, he wins everywhere he goes. He grows as a play caller and a head coach and a recruiter, and he has ascended to, because Cincinnati, you know, we're talking about a team that won a lot in the Big East around then, he has ascended to the Notre Dame level instead of, okay, here's an experiment with somebody who is a big name. And now with Michigan.
Yeah. And it's,
do you think,
by the way, it's not a direct comparison between Weiss and Harbaugh and Brian Kelly and who might be next for Michigan. But, I'm just thinking of it from a fan's perspective. I was really disappointed when the Weiss thing blew up. I didn't really like Charlie Weiss that much as a person. Like, he's kind of a jerk. He really was.
Okay.
But ultimately, I was hopeful that he could come in with his expertise. He had worked with Tom Brady. It's like, oh my God, this is going to be such
recruited
a great.
Recruited really well.
At the skill positions, recruited well.
Yeah.
Didn't work out. Did not work out. I feel for the Michigan faithful out there who, if and when the Wolverines go in a different direction, feel disappointed by the fact that, damn, it didn't work out with our guy Harbaugh. My only point in bringing all this up, this long-winded diatribe, is just that have faith in that piece of paper, because you're right. They did get the Juwan Howard hire correct. I'm sure there are a lot of coaches out there who really want the Michigan job. And just because it's not as big a name as a Jim Harbaugh, a Michigan man, so to speak, it doesn't mean that the next guy can't have success. I don't think there's a very obvious plan B. There are definitely good coaches, younger coaches, who might want to take a crack at this and could do a great job at Michigan. It's just none of them are going to come with the sex appeal of Jim Harbaugh. They're just not.
Well, so in the footprint, obviously, you have Luke Fickell, who turned down Michigan State, who has his own Ohio State connections, but it doesn't seem like
Cincinnati.
That job is opening
Another
up.
Cincinnati guy.
Another Cincinnati guy who's had tremendous success there. You know, Jeff Hafley at Boston College. You have Tom Allen at Indiana, Mario Cristobal at Oregon. All of, you know, Michigan is a bigger national program than all of these places. If you want to look guys up and coming in the area, there are younger guys. Matt Campbell, of course, at Iowa State. We've already talked about clones. Even, you know, Sean Lewis at Kent State. It's going to be about fit. It's going to be about the ability to navigate the behind the scenes scene at Michigan, which Rich Rod, I think early on, was sort of undercut. If you read a lot about what was going on, he lost a lot of players to transfer when he was brought in and Lloyd Carr retired. And so it's going to be a fit thing more than anything. It's going to be a vision thing, and it's going to be who's empowered. And it's a problem that Texas has had, where like, okay, this booster behind the scenes doesn't like this coordinator hire. This is who they're hiring at this coordinator, or this assistant coach. Like, who's going to be empowered? Who's going to be able to navigate all of those things? Who's going to be able to recruit? And who's going to be able to say, this is the job that I have been working towards and that I want specifically? Because it has opened up, because it is one of the world's major college football jobs. So, you know, there are all those names. And I don't, you know, Tom Allen would be amazing at Michigan. Is he going to leave for a team in the conference? Hard to say. No. Generational wealth is a hell of a thing. Who knows? But he's getting paid at Indiana. So I think there are a number of names. Pat Fitzgerald, another name that constantly comes up with these kinds of jobs. He just signed an extension. Hard to see him leaving Northwestern, a place that he has, you know, built into what it is. But, you know, there are those names. There are those conversations. Michigan remains a big place, but it has, you know, the shadow has grown deeper and darker in that conference because of Ohio State's success. So it's going to take a lot, but I don't think it's going to be, I don't think Michigan is going to have to go to their fifth choice to get this job.
No. By the way, I like that you throw out Halfley's name for every opening. You're a big Halfley guy. You're a big Halfley guy.
He is well regarded. Boston College did pretty well this past year. And he was, I mean, is he one of the better coordinated Big Ten coordinators of the past 5 years?
Granted, listen,
enormous amount of talent. But yeah, absolutely.
I like the guy. I like that you're a fan.
I'm telling you, he's well regarded in these circles. That's all I'm telling you.
And he was really good on the coach's film room.
Very good. Yeah. So
the ultimate
NFL experience. Yeah. I think he was with the 49ers. So we have that crossover with Jim Harbaugh. That's important.
I like him too. Okay. Just not as much as you, which is fine.
It's okay. You'll get there.
I will probably get there. You pick.
All right. This sort of goes hand in hand with this. This is from The Real Weave.
Ooh.
Don't know what that means.
Okay.
What are the top five college football is better when Team X is good? Conversely, which teams make college football better when they stink?
This is the ultimate fantasy thing.
It's a fantasy thing question, and it's completely subjective, and it is a thing that people will try it out in the offseason. College football is just better when Texas is good. College football is just better when Alabama's good. College football is better when Miami's good. The one that jumps out to me is USC. I just think for geographic balance, I like a strong SC holding with Oregon and sometimes Washington and Stanford, you know, like, but you have to have that USC base to have college football be a thing in Los Angeles, I think is a big deal for the sport. And we've seen that sort of vacuum, even with other schools having success on the West Coast. It's really nice for the sport when USC, particularly with the charismatic coach, I think it's only happened once recently, but I think that's important. So that would be an answer.
A lot of people say Miami.
I think a lot of it is environment. Like, it's nice to have this environment rocking. It's nice to have a huge game at this school. It's nice to have a big game involving this school.
Anytime Miami is the answer here. And we've heard people say this one before.
Right.
Plenty of times. My football's better with Miami good again.
Sure.
It's not like Michigan. It's not like Texas. Anytime somebody answers Miami, they're talking about some of those legendary Miami teams that we saw.
Sure.
At the turn of the century, in the early aughts. I don't really care if Miami's good.
See, I do. And I'll tell you why. And it's a very similar reason to USC. It's geographic balance, but it's also because there's so much talent in South Florida. If Miami is really, really good and really, really good consistently, the assumption is that they're recruiting and developing and evaluating the best of the best in their backyard and keeping them home. We've seen all of the players leave that area and have so much success elsewhere. So if you're talking about a Miami team that is keeping talent home, you're talking about a stacked college football experience, right? You're talking about a team that is laughably deep, especially at speedier positions. And so that to me is a big deal. And even though they play in an NFL stadium and it's a smaller private school and it doesn't have the fan base size, that sort of archetype of a really good Miami program is there another program in the country that when they're good, you understand how they play and what their game is like? And, you know, they even the 1 year recently where they had a streak of really good football games, They were really fun. Ty, the turnover chain.
The turnover chain.
Right?
I know
the turnover chain. Was that not fun and cool and unique in that moment? It was. And so that, to me, can't be replicated when another school is good. There is a certain,
But they've all tried to replicate the turnover chain.
No, I know. I'm saying, but they're influential in that way.
Who cares? I feel like every time I hear this answer, football's better. It's just better when Miami is good.
Well, hold
good.
On. What do we have? Hypothetically, if Miami is an A-minus, A program, whatever, what do we have? Well, we have a second team in the ACC that can be excellent, right?
I guess.
Does that
make college football
better?
I think I miss. It does. Sure, it does. It absolutely makes college football better insofar as there's a counterbalance, perhaps, to Clemson.
Yeah.
I miss Florida State a lot more than I miss Miami.
Okay. I mean, they can both be the answer.
They can both be the answer.
Five.
This isn't to say, by the way, that I'm rooting against Miami, that I have any kind of issue with Miami. But I think it's a bad answer because I feel like more often than not, when people say it, they miss Miami when they were awesome back in the day.
Sure.
We all do. They were awesome back in the day. I just don't think that's the best answer here. I don't know.
If I could tell you year in and year out, I'm not talking about national championship contender Miami. I'm talking about year in and year out, 10-2 Miami with killer receivers and running backs and safeties and corners and an edge rusher that just year in and year out, these are like first, second round talents. And year in, year out, they scare the bejesus out of Dabo Sweeney.
I'm okay with Dabo
on the sideline looking frustrated, angry, and overwhelmed by a loud Miami crowd with players on the other sidelines howling with laughter over beating Clemson. You're telling me college football is not obviously more fun in that situation?
If we could, so counterpoint to my own point, if we could get that version of Miami, just that super chippy version of Miami that we saw back in the day, that would serve as the counterbalance to Clemson. That would really get in Dabo's craw.
Yeah, of course.
Really get in Dabo's craw.
Dabo. Dabo would hate it.
I just don't think we're there.
No, we're not there, but I'm just telling you, if this is a hypothetical question about the teams that would make college football more fun, it would be more fun with that version of... Yeah.
The weirdest answer I've ever heard to this question is Michigan State.
Yeah, I didn't think about Michigan State when thinking about this answer.
That's the weirdest one that I've heard. But otherwise, you could apply anybody.
Well, it's totally subjective, right? It's who did you grow up with as good teams? And if you're 56, it might not necessarily be the same answer as if you're 36. But to me, I want geographic balance. I want the bigger rivalries of the sport to mean something. So I'd love to look forward to and legitimately not know who's going to win the Michigan-Ohio State game or the Texas-Oklahoma game, which I guess it's been the case. That's gone back and forth some. But the bigger rivalries in the sport, I want, Florida-Miami, Florida-State-Miami, Florida-Florida State. I want those matchups to be toss-ups. Other than that, I just like good fun football and we can watch every game. So a season isn't necessarily more fun because this one school is good. But if we have a bunch of interesting rivalries and we know about the storylines and narratives and players coming up at random places, that's good by me too.
The interesting thing, and then we're going to move on, is that when you ask people this question, if you ask an Ohio State fan this question, if you ask a Michigan fan this question, inevitably they will always say their biggest rival.
Sure. Yeah.
Even despite the fact they hate him, they will always say it's better when...
It's no fun. It is fun. But I was going to say it's no fun to stomp a team year in, year out. For me, look on the outside.
It is fun for a while. It is fun as a novelty.
Right.
Undeniably. And we've done it. You get the answer all the time.
I'll just speak as an Oregon fan. Oregon has rivals with, rivalries with Oregon State, with Washington, with USC. There is something nice about butterflies before kickoff. Like, it's weird if you get to a place where you're an Ohio State fan, you're just like, well, I'm just going to blow out Michigan. Like, it's more fun when there is that energy in your living room, in the stadium, whatever. And I think USC and Miami are my answers with that.
Yeah. I don't care if Miami's good.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
JR707, one of our verballers.
Yeah.
This is a Dan question here. I don't really have any thoughts on this. The new Pac-12 guy, George, what's his name?
I'm going to look it up right now. It was like Klavikov or something. Clavicle.
George Klavicle.
Pac-12. Yeah, George Klavicle. Klyavkov?
Let's go Klavicle. We can go Klavicle.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on George Klavicle? New Pac-12 commissioner for those playing along at home.
Yeah, has a background in, it was MGM, it was Hulu, all sorts of streaming and, involved with sports rights and conversations and contracts and from more of the broadcast angle. I think he was in Las Vegas with all of this stuff with MGM Entertainment. So, boxing and stadiums and all that kind of stuff. So there is that tangential connection to sports. The priorities are clear. The priorities are clear in that it's get everybody on the same page, get everybody aligned in terms of vision for the conference competitively. He talked about, succeeding with football and men's basketball, just because it's obvious that those two sports drive the conference's bottom line is incredibly important. There's only so much that a commissioner of the Pac-12 can do in terms of making good hires at important schools for basketball and football. But I think his background with streaming and broadcast stuff and stadiums and helping to get the Pac-12 on the biggest possible stages. The conference needs to win huge September games. There's nothing much he can do to do that. They, Oregon needs to beat Auburn, and Washington, I think, is playing Michigan this year. Oregon's playing Ohio State. And I don't think USC has any sort of big marquee September matchups coming up. They have Notre Dame every year. UCLA has LSU. So there's nothing that George Klavicle can do at the moment to drive wins and thus attention for the conference heading into the rest of the year. But broadcast rights, getting the conference on the biggest possible TV stages. So that's ESPN, Fox, CBS, NBC, whoever has these rights, and getting the conference, if it's a streaming package or a part streaming package, right? The NFL is going Thursday night Amazon full time in a couple years, I believe. So it's getting the conference to a point where anybody who wants to see a Pac-12 game doesn't just happen to have the right cable package. That is going to be huge. And the biggest games need to be played at times where, I know people will watch those late games because sometimes they're the only show on, those 10 o'clock Eastern kicks. But if you have a number 11 ranked UCLA playing a number 9 ranked USC at the end of the year, probably shouldn't kick off at 10 Eastern.
Right.
Like there should be some, I think, advanced strategy conversations about how to get the most eyeballs at the best times on these teams, because it's a, college football is a complete attention economy, and whatever your perception of a team is what the team is. If you're not watching, you don't have a perception. So the perception right now with the Pac-12 is that they are behind, and within his powers and within the office's powers, they need to financially get to a nice place, because the better the conference does financially, it's tied to how well the teams do financially, and the better the teams do financially, the more money they have to pay head coaches, upgrade facilities, pay assistant coaches, and compete on some level with the SEC and the Big Ten, the two conferences that are far and above everybody else.
The example that I use a lot is when Carson Palmer won the Heisman Trophy, and Carson Palmer had a great year.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, he was Heisman worthy.
Was that 03, 02, somewhere in there?
Yeah. He didn't really win the Heisman until he dismantled Notre Dame.
Right.
On national television at night. Everybody saw it. After that, there was no question who was going to win the Heisman Trophy. That that attention, as you said, the attention economy of college football is a big deal. And it's easy for us on the East Coast to overlook that. And I think
speak for yourself. I'm on the third coast here.
You're on the third coast.
Michigan. Yeah. Yeah.
I also think it's easy for folks on the West Coast to, you know, maybe not have that perspective and feel a bit slighted by it. But the Eastern time zone drives a lot, especially in terms of, you know, perception. So, yeah, I hope he's able to turn it around. I don't know much about George Clavicle, but
seems like a good guy.
I thought his
press conference, which ultimately means nothing, was pretty good. I thought he did a pretty good job and was pretty direct and transparent. I mean, here's the other thing. Who has opinions about the following coaches west of or east of Salt Lake City? Clay Helton, Jonathan Smith, Nick Rolovich, Justin Wilcox, David Shaw, Jed Fish, like Carl Durrell, like a lot of, I mean, the consistent part of the sport is the profile of your conference's coaches. And right now, there's not a lot moving the needle on the West Coast in terms of coaches. And that can change with consistent winning, and that can change with creative marketing or whatever it takes. But this is where the conference is right now in terms of name recognition, face recognition, personality recognition. There's not a ton for the Pac-12 to hang its hat on right now.
How much
do people in Nashville or Miami or Columbus know about Jimmy Lake?
Nothing.
I don't know.
Nothing.
Doesn't seem like a lot.
This is a fun question that we got from John. Which two teams could swap conferences and completely fit in with their new conference?
I have answers for this. Do you have answers for this?
I do have answers for this. I think we need to set some ground rules here. It can't be like a Florida State situation.
Meaning
if
they're
you put
geographically close and similar in some ways, that it makes sense.
If you put Florida in the SEC or ACC, and Florida State in the SEC, it's basically the same team. So you can't do
basically
that.
Basically the same team.
You can't do that. You
that's
can't do
insulting
that.
To both programs.
I don't care.
Okay.
You can't pick one that's that obvious.
I was going to say Clemson, South Carolina.
Because Clemson, South Carolina will be perfect.
It needs the competition. South Carolina could use, you know, you already have Carolina teams in the ACC, North Carolina, South Carolina. So
I feel like those are way too obvious. So I started thinking about this a little bit more broadly, and I'm looking for teams that kind of fit into that hybrid role where school in one conference, but definitely culturally speaking, could fit into another. And I landed on West Virginia.
Ooh, interesting. Yeah. On an island in the Big 12.
On an island in the Big 12, was in the old school Big East, right? So there's a bit of a cultural fit there, certainly more geographically fit for like the ACC, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Culturally could fit in with the SEC pretty well too.
Sure.
So West Virginia to me feels like the ultimate wild card that we could swap with somebody else.
And you're talking about an ACC school then, geographically, SEC school geographically?
I think you could swap West Virginia with a Clemson.
Okay.
I think you could swap West Virginia with...
what about West Virginia and Louisville?
A school like a Louisville?
Yeah.
I think
Louisville
that would
to
work.
The Big 12? Yeah.
I think you could swap West Virginia with a school like Missouri, obviously.
So Mizzou... No, I think we can't do return to conferences. If I were to do that, if I were to do a return to a conference that we already know that there's some level of fit, I think Nebraska, Iowa State.
Okay.
Iowa already has the Big Ten footprint.
Right.
Nebraska returns to the Big 12. And I think one of the final times those two teams played as two Big 12 teams, it was a 9-7 game. 2008 or 2009, I actually brought it up, Ty. Can we do an off-season Dvorak?
We could.
For that
9-7
game.
Do you have it?
Fumble, field goal, punt, punt, touchdown, punt, interception, passing touchdown, punt, punt, fumble, punt, 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 fumble, fumble, miss field goal, punt, punt, interception, punt, interception, and mercifully, end of the 9-7 game.
How did you pull up Dvorak that quickly?
I have two hands, Ty.
Oh, right.
Two hands. So that would be my answer. Nebraska, Iowa State there. What about Cincinnati, Syracuse?
I mean, sure.
So Syracuse to the American.
Sure. It's definitely easier if you start doing this on the group of five level. Definitely.
Well, yes and no. Because you still need to find a power five team who would fit in with a group of five conference, which is not always the easiest and nicest thing to do. But Syracuse has... I looked this up and I'm trying to remember. I think they have not had two winning seasons in a row in 20 years. Mm. So that's where like, okay, maybe they're not a power five-ish program. They didn't have... The last time they won three, had three winning seasons in a row was with Donovan McNabb in the mid to late 90s. So it's not a program that has always come through in terms of investing and hiring and developing and recruiting and winning on the field. So maybe they're not a perennial fit with a Power 5 conference, whereas Cincinnati has done it as a Big East team. They're doing it as a Group of 5 team. And, I mean, I think Cincinnati would be a divisional favorite in the current ACC if they're not in the Atlantic, right?
Probably. I just think West Virginia is the key. I think you could... You go a bunch of different ways on West Virginia.
What about Notre Dame, Maryland?
Yeah.
Notre Dame in the Big Ten, Maryland back in the ACC, if that's a return exercise.
Yeah. No. Totally.
I don't like Maryland in the Big Ten.
No. It feels weird, doesn't
still,
it?
Maryland has been in the Big Ten for years upon years.
Feels weird.
And I still think to myself, when's Maryland playing Virginia? When's Maryland playing NC State? Like, it doesn't fit for me, Ty.
No.
It just doesn't.
No.
So if we're counting Notre Dame as an ACC school, which we kind of can.
All right. Let's go to here you go. Speaking of specific teams, can Arizona State realistically win the Pac-12 this year?
Yes.
From Devin. So a lot of experience coming back. They've got a good defense. Eight starters are returning.
Both of their corners are legit. I mean, they're probably like fourth or fifth round guys, but they're NFL types.
They're good.
I like Chase Lucas. Yeah,
that's good. They do not play Oregon in conference play, which is a bonus. Mm-hmm. So I think there is plenty of reason to be excited about ASU. I happen to see that the over under for win total is 9, which is a sizable number. I think 9 would imply that, yeah, they're a contender of some sort. 9 wins is a good season.
Yep.
So at least from that standpoint, Vegas would sort of agree. Realistically, could they? Yeah, realistically, sure.
They are a sort of little thing program where some of the games that they've lost under Herm Edwards is like, man, they're just not doing the little things to win winnable games. Like last year against UCLA, I think they fumbled twice in the red zone and they had two red zone turnovers and lost that game. Like fumbled snaps, like very fixable things. And I know last year was very strange, but that's the issue to me, because I like Jaden Daniels. I don't know if I love, but I really like Jaden Daniels. I like their running backs. They've recruited at receiver pretty well. They've got some big bodies there. They're in a really nice spot because there's no obvious between... Is it Chaz Brewer starting for Utah quarterback this year?
Ooh,
I think that's who's starting at quarterback for Utah. So that worries me. The inconsistencies of USC looking as bad as they looked early on last year against the Arizona schools. I think UCLA, and we have another question here about Chip Kelly in a hot seat, but I think UCLA is quietly pretty scary in the South. Mm. I am high on UCLA right now. I don't know how high, but I am high on them. But that is to say, everybody kind of seems like at their best outside of right now Colorado and Arizona, but the other four schools in the division, ASU and the LA schools and Utah, they're B plus A minus at their best. There's nobody who's obviously head and shoulders above, even though USC has received the lion's share of the hype right now in the South. So, yeah, absolutely they could win the conference, because I don't think there's anybody in the North right now. Oregon is in a really good place, but they don't necessarily have the obvious answer at quarterback. So
it seems
ASU's in a really nice place if they start checking the little thing boxes throughout the season.
It seems totally feasible to me.
Yeah.
Certainly in the South.
Everybody has that Achilles heel.
Everybody's got that Achilles heel. Yeah. And it does help that they do not play Oregon in conference play. And that they got a bunch of guys back on defense. It's always a great building block. Got a good quarterback. Sure. So, I don't know. I think they have a
limb from limb win. You always like that.
Love
against Arizona last year. Against
Love
a rival.
Limb from limb.
70-7 or whatever it happened to be. It was somewhere in there.
Staying out west, Crawtastic. You mentioned the Chip Kelly question. How hot is Chip Kelly's seat at UCLA? So you noted here, thank you for doing this, brutal back half of the schedule at Washington, Oregon, at Utah. They've got Colorado, close out the year at USC, and then home against Cal. So it's not an easy stretch. Was it 2 years ago you thought Chip Kelly was done? You thought he was going to be like 1 year and done.
You thought one or two years and done. Yeah,
his heart was not in it. It feels like, despite the fact that, you know, schedules have been tough, it feels like they've gotten better, or there have been more reasons to be optimistic about UCLA football.
Sure. Yeah, they nearly beat. They gave away the SC game. They nearly beat Oregon with their backup quarterback. They beat ASU. There are pieces absolutely there for UCLA. I mean, DTR has been there forever at quarterback. Their line has gotten better. They have a couple of legit dudes up front on defense. Their secondary has come along. To me, the big weakness with UCLA is sort of the same thing that we've talked about with a couple of other schools, like, for example, Iowa State, who's in a much better position than UCLA. But who is pushing? Who is pushing on the UCLA roster defenses in the Pac-12 down the field? Who is that gravitational guy for UCLA on offense? They have decent players. They have good players. I like their tight end. I think it's Greg Dulcich, something like that. I always trust a good Greg. But who is that lethal weapon? I don't see that with UCLA. And that's the concern for me if we're talking about, okay, has UCLA arrived? Is UCLA that team ready to win the South? The answer is maybe. But USC has better receivers. Utah has a better defense and has better depth and is recruited to a system for far longer. USC is a higher level talent. ASU is higher level talent, probably. But UCLA has the most proven high level coach of all of those places.
And it's really interesting, too, that would be the problem for Chip Kelly.
Right. If you love Zach Charbonnet.
Yeah, but not having the gravitational player. Not having that downfield, not having just that guy. He made those guys at Oregon. That was why we liked Oregon.
NFL types.
No, they weren't NFL types.
It was Braylon Addison. It was Josh Huff. It was Jeff Mayle. It was guys like who were just awesome in college. And it doesn't seem like UCLA has even those level guys.
But figured out a way to put those guys in space and make exciting plays.
Yeah. I mean, they had DeAnthony Thomas and LaMichael James. Those were Heisman caliber all-purpose and running back weapons that, look, it's very tough because it was a very specific program he ran at Oregon and he was sort of ahead of the curve offensively and now a lot of places have caught up. But those players are available at UCLA. It's a matter of Chip Kelly finding, convincing, developing, crafting a system around them. I think they're going to be in a good place this year. I think they're going to be a B-plus team.
Yeah, but I don't think his seat is all that hot, nor do I think it should be.
I don't think so either, to the point of the question. I think it's Nooch, Ty. I don't think it's a cold seat. I think UCLA fans and administrators want to be, and I don't believe this was, the AD, Martin Jarmond, was not the guy who hired Chip Kelly, but they want UCLA to be 9-3-ish pretty often, but nothing wild. But they want them to be good. They want them to beat USC every so often. I don't think there are crazy expectations right now. But when you pay Chip Kelly what they're paying him and when he brings the profile that he brings, there is that expectation that they're not, you know, embarrassing themselves. And it's clear that they've improved over the course of his time there, just in a probably frustrating way. There have been, you know, there have been the COVID stuff. There's been the games where they're, you know, I think they started the season out a couple of years ago in Cincinnati down like 25 players. They need to build that roster of 85 capable, pretty good college football players. And hopefully it's now there, but it certainly wasn't those first couple of years.
Let's go one more football and then two off topic to close
okay,
us out
let's do
here.
It. Where are we going?
You get to pick.
Okay. If Clemson or Ohio State were to lose any game in conference play, who would it be against? Just Live Happy wants to know.
Just Live Happy.
Just Live Happy.
It's a far easier question on the Ohio State side than it is on the Clemson side, just because the Big Ten has more killers. The Big Ten East is tough.
Are there any sandwich situations for Ohio State? Or somebody getting a bye before playing Ohio State at home?
I'm looking at Ohio State's schedule, so I don't know about the others, but from their standpoint,
I see no sandwiches here.
From their standpoint, at least on the conference side, it's smooth sailing. Unless you're counting the Minnesota game in week one, which we could have a conversation. Minnesota's got a seasoned quarterback. Defense is probably going to be an issue this year.
It's in Minneapolis.
But there's enough talent there. It's opening week. It's a night game on Fox. Maybe you catch him. Maybe you catch him. It's either at Minnesota week one. It's certainly not anybody else until you get to like late October. Early
new
to late October.
Minnesota's developed some nice receivers lately.
So Minnesota is a conversation. At Indiana.
And it's a look ahead spot.
Look ahead spot. At Indiana could have that conversation. Also a look ahead spot with Penn State on deck.
Yeah, but Indiana scared them enough last year, and Ohio State has a bye before the Hoosiers. So that doesn't really move me.
At Michigan to close out the year.
I don't think Michigan State's a body blow team right now the week before. No, I'd say in order, it's at Minnesota to open the year and then at Indiana.
Penn State, Halloween weekend.
No, Penn State doesn't do them for me. In Columbus, either Sean Clifford or a new quarterback, not as much.
You could squint, though, and you could make a case for Penn State.
They've uglied up games with Ohio State, but not this version of Ohio State.
You could squint and come up with Michigan. I don't know who you're going to squint and find on the Clemson side.
What's there? Do they have sandwiches? Do you have their schedule in front of you? I'm pulling them up right now.
Not really.
So we're coming up with squint teams.
Not really.
At Pitt the week before Florida State. But otherwise, there's no sandwich there.
Look at the schedule.
I suppose. No.
The toughest game on this schedule is week one.
I mean, NC State took a step forward last year from a crazy down 2019, and it's on the road. It's not really a letdown look ahead, but it is on the road.
I don't know. I'm just, the toughest game on this schedule is week one against Georgia. That is not an answer to who in conference could be Clemson.
The best quarterbacks on Clemson's schedule, I mean, the best one is JT Daniels, but on the ACC side of things,
it's what? Mackenzie Milton. It's Mikhail Cunningham.
Yeah. It's Mikhail Malik. That's it. Those are the two guys that, unless you're like a Kenny Pickett guy. No. South Carolina's starting a new guy.
My answer is Pitt.
God, and they just slaughtered Pitt earlier
last year. Killed him. My answer is Pitt. I don't know who else to answer with.
Well, somebody asked a question about what Florida State's ceiling is if Mackenzie Milton is the absolute, like, explosion that he could have been at UCF, that he has been at UCF, what Florida State's ceiling is. But man, Florida State got pushed around way too much on defense. They hit the portal hard. There are pieces on offense. Mackenzie Milton is an upgrade over any quarterback they've played recently when he is Mackenzie Milton,
right?
Provided he is Mackenzie Milton physically. They lost key pieces on that defense last year that wasn't even that good, but no, they're another team that doesn't have there are no scaries on the outside for Florida State right now. They ran the ball pretty well, but you need to push Clemson around in the passing game to really, really stand a chance. That's when Clemson is lost, when somebody's able to match or exceed their speed. And it just doesn't seem like that's Florida State. So I'm removing them from the conversation right now. But it has to be situational. It has to be, you know, DJU is so down after getting confused and drilled by Georgia early, and maybe NC State later in the month is, you know, able to be that team to finally take them down in the ACC. But otherwise, I don't know.
We have four off-topic questions here that we can rifle through very quickly. Let's get through all of them.
Okay.
The first two are for you.
Okay.
What kind of pans or stones are you using for the conventional pizza oven?
Mm-hmm.
Go.
For my conventional kitchen oven, I use a baking steel. I think it's Nerd Chef is the brand, but any of the steels will do because they retain, I mean, it's thermal mass tie. You can go on and on about this, but they retain and conduct heat better than the ceramic stones. What do you want to know? He said steel or stone? Is that what he asked?
He said, what kind of pans or stones?
Oh, and the pans. I use a Lloyd pan for the Detroit style pan pies. Lloyd, L-L-O-D. YD, available on, they should be on Amazon. They're really good. They're anodized aluminum.
Rank your top five pizzas to make and which college football team is most like said pizza.
I don't have a comparison.
Just give
for
me a couple
specific teams, but yeah. I can tell you that if you want me to make analogies between the pizza making process and building a program, I most certainly can, Ty. Sourcing ingredients, paying attention to the process, not getting down on yourself early. A lot of comparisons there. I don't go too complicated with my pizzas and pizza toppings. I'm very focused on getting my dough right in terms of how wet the dough is, in terms of how long I let it sit in the fridge. That's where my obsession lies. So my favorite pizza is probably, I make one with pepperoni, shaved garlic. I have a garlic mandolin, Ty.
Need the mandolin.
And a spicy honey drizzle. That to me is a really nice combination of salty and spicy and sweetness from the garlic and the honey that works really well with pizza. So yeah, pepperoni, shaved garlic, hot honey.
Sassy molassy.
Sweet, sassy molassy. Spicy, sweet, salty. Works really well. You know, get the fat from the cheese and the acid from the tomato sauce. It's wonderful.
Bort, if you have bed sheets made out of cold cuts, what will the cold cuts be? I go turkey. I always go turkey.
I think it's a terrible answer, Ty.
Of course.
What do you want out of your bed sheet, ultimately?
I want to stay warm.
You can only select one cold cut.
I want to stay warm.
You want to stay warm. You want to be comfortable, but you also maybe want a little bit of breathability for seasonal comfort.
Right. So,
and you're talking just sheet. He didn't mention comforter.
No, bed sheet.
A sheet. Yes.
Didn't
that's the similar texture.
Lady Gaga wore like a roast beef thing once, didn't she?
She did. So roast beef is not a bad answer. Roast beef is pretty smooth.
We've seen that used in a practical application. That's the only reason I bring it up.
I don't feel like roast beef breathes that well.
No.
Because it is a fattier cold cut. Turkey's not a bad answer. If we're talking cold cuts, you're either, there's a grittiness to turkey, to roast turkey, which I love on a sandwich, and then smoked turkey's smoother, but it also strikes me as a little bit more, I don't know, oily?
But it's not that oily. If you get like just regular sliced turkey, it's not that oily.
Okay.
As compared to something like a salami.
Salami, and there's a lot of fat. You're going to get greasier.
You know what I mean?
Bed sheets. Yeah, for sure. No, that's a much higher fat content. My answer is probably prosciutto.
Prosciutto.
I think there is a delicate softness to prosciutto. I think it would breathe well because it's cut pretty thin.
But there's a lot of salt in prosciutto.
There's a lot of salt.
Would it dehydrate you?
We're just talking texture, though, with this.
Texture.
Oh, yeah. So you're saying it's pulling liquid out of your skin?
Yeah.
I think I'm still going to stick with prosciutto because some of your other porks are thicker cut, your sopressata, capicola wouldn't be bad either.
If you're in a humid climate, maybe you go prosciutto.
Yeah, I think prosciutto is my answer. That strikes me as the silkiest of the cold cut options.
I think I go turkey. I think I keep it simple. I go turkey. Not a whole lot in there.
I can be talked into a thinly shaved ham as well.
Okay. Final one here from Dan, one of our trusted footballers. What's your favorite streaming service? He says, I consider HBO a necessity, but Netflix probably has the most new content. Disney Plus has the most relevant catalog culturally, and Amazon Prime has some real bangers.
Very easy answer with this. So we're saying if the examples that Dan used, good friend of the show, Dan Klobuchar, with a dicey mustache, I would say.
If he still has it. Yeah,
that's true. If we are eliminating live sports, because some of these, like what does Hulu, they're a streaming service, and I believe they have live TV and live sports. So if we're just talking about a streaming service with non-live programming, I think the easy answer, if we're looking at it in terms of if you are to be locked in a room for a year, which would leave you the most satisfied in terms of variety and depth of catalog? Mm. Does that make sense?
It would be Netflix.
I think it's HBO Max.
Mm.
Because so you have endless high quality series, right? If you haven't seen True Detective, if you haven't seen The Wire, if you haven't seen Oz, if you haven't seen The Sopranos, like you have the prestige television, you have the movies, not a sponsor. HBO Max could be a sponsor.
Could be a sponsor.
If they wanted to it be, could be. As I'm selling the hell out of them.
Advertising at solidverbal.com.
They also have they also have like random series that are on other networks because they have the same parent company. So like Rick and Morty, I think Friends is on HBO Max now. So in terms of series, and they have movies. So I have been pretty thrilled with my HBO Max streaming experience and variety.
I just feel like you get more from Netflix. There's
Netflix
more
is great.
More variety. And I agree that the highs are definitely higher with HBO. But lately I've been getting into those like B-minus movies that are Netflix only that okay. are just good enough. Like there's a little
Lucy Liu is in all of them.
There's a little bit of Hallmark Channel there where there's a formula yeah. and they don't veer from it. And the movies are only going to be so good, but right. they're good enough to keep you entertained. So for they my have, money, yeah. Netflix has anything you're into. More often than not,
I guess it depends on what you're into, but I don't think they have necessarily the depth of the prestige series.
Maybe
they have
not.
A lot of like very like into it for 36 hours reality shows. They have those.
Right.
And they have like, hey, here are like, this is Hot Lake House. You like watch it for 7 minutes. You're like, okay, I get it. They have a lot of those.
They do.
But I don't know.
They do. No, I think for me, it's Netflix. I think for me, it's Netflix because okay. there's a lot of, again, I hear what you're saying on the big budget, top shelf premium series.
Right.
Netflix has a lot of TV stuff that could hold you over for a while.
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, it just depends on your taste, obviously. And Disney Plus, everybody says is great. I have found in looking through that there are some things I want to watch, but by and large, I don't know. I don't need to go back and rewatch the Marvel movies I've seen. I find myself not really wanting to go rewatch Star Wars movies, even if I've liked the specific one, whatever. So there's a lot there. And I think it's better if you're also including like children with Disney Plus, but that doesn't move me as much. I think HBO has more of those for me been meaning to watches. And so that would be nice if I were locked in a room for a year.
Mayor of Easttown, very good, by the way.
Good accents per you.
Very good accents. They did a good job.
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. One, thank you all for writing in. We made it. We are back. We are building towards the 2021 college football season.
Yes.
Don't forget to follow along on all the social media channels. Don't forget to go on out to verballers.com where you can find all of our Patreon content, including the video for this very episode. You'll catch some of the goofs that I edit out of the audio feed. Not too many of them today.
That's true.
A couple. Now we're good. Couple little Easter eggs for all y'all. And don't forget, if you are interested in helping out as a social media intern, it is submissions@solidverbal.com. Let us know what you've done. Let us know what you could bring to the table. We're interested from
most definitely
in hearing from the Verballerhood once more. So fun show, Dan. I appreciate your cheese run from
always
the West Coast. 12 pounds of cheese.
I'll let you know how it goes. I did also bring to the West Coast and back from the West Coast both my baking scale and a bench scraper for making dough with.
Okay.
That's very light and small.
You need that. You need to have that with you.
I did bring a pan back as well from the West Coast. I ordered a pan to make my pan pies to the West Coast, and I decided to bring it back because it'd be nice to have another one. I had the room. What do you want me to tell you?
For that guy over there, my good friend Dan Rubenstein, for myself, Ty Hildenbrand, thank you so much for coming on back, asking your questions, and for bearing with us here through our silliness. Dan, you stay solid.
Yeah. Hey. Peace.
If you travel for work, you know to pack two suits, business and swim. You know with your Delta SkyMiles Business Amex card, buying that plane ticket for a business trip can get you closer to medallion status. You know that a meeting in Montana means visiting almost every national park.
Yellowstone? Check.
Because you're the chief excursion officer. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum Business American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know business.